Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Has a Family, Williams.
All right.
That wasn't even a dig. I'm just trying to correlate to the movie, okay?
Uh-huh. All right.
Along with us as well is intern Amy, I, Jane, You, Robot.
I forced this movie upon people because I couldn't handle any more emotional blows to my soul in this month of February. Welcome to torment.
It's true. Amy did suggest this week's movie as we're going to be reviewing last year's Netflix animated hit, The Willoughbys. So stick around as we get into that. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over 250 episodes over on the website. Check us out. Last week we talked about Netflix's controversial romantic film, Malcolm and Marie.
Romantic film.
Okay.
Sorry. Controversial. Controversial
film. There we go. We'll just leave it at that.
Yep.
Yes, last week was a very interesting conversation. Lesson 253. Check it out if you get a chance to, if you're looking to reel from heartbreak or anything. Also, check out all of our previous episodes where we do get into a lot of wonderful and interesting conversations. So, www.filmlosophers.com. But as we kind of come around to this episode here, before you start wandering off onto other things, we are going to be talking about this week's episode, which is on Netflix's The Willoughbys.
Yay.
This is a movie that actually dropped last year around April, mm-hmm. give or take around April. And it was a very unique and interesting film because of the fact that it was kind of out of nowhere. Apparently, it's based on, it is based on like a children's book and so forth.
Yeah.
Right?
By Lois Lowry, The Willoughbys. It carries name and some concepts, but not exactly the same, which if you want to get into that later, we totally have that time.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that in a little bit. But as we mentioned, Amy did kind of hit a boiling point, if you will, on seriousness and decided this week we needed to kind of dial it back to something a little bit more family friendly, or in this case, animated. So before we continue, Spencer, why don't you give them that official synopsis goodness?
Convinced they'd be better off raising themselves, the Willoughby children hatch a sneaky plan to send their selfish parents on vacation. The siblings then embark on their own high-flying adventure to find the true meaning of family.
Directed by Chris Pern and co-directed by Corey Evans and Rob Lodermeyer, the film stars the voices of Will Forte, Maya Rudolph, Alessia Cara, Terry Crews, Martin Short, Jane Krakowski, Sean Cullen, and Ricky Gervais. Gervais, whoever says it, who also narrates in the film. You're looking at me weird. What's up?
No, I was listening.
Is it, so, okay, is it Alessia or Alicia? Or how do you pronounce that name?
Ooh, I'd say Alicia, but I don't know because I don't listen to anything else. I didn't know until I was like, she came up on the thing. I was like, oh, is that a singer? I think that's a singer. Okay.
Wow. I mean, hey, more power to her. I would just like, it's one of those things where, like, you don't really know how to pronounce until you're in the midst of pronouncing and you're like, wait, that doesn't sound right. There's probably another way that it was meant to be said. Someone's mom is probably like, no, it's Alicia or whatever, something ridiculous. A couple key notes real quick. This is the second Netflix's animated film to be rated PG by the MPAA after 2019's Claws. And then a couple other little things. Alessia Cara actually had a sinus infection when she recorded the demo version of I Choose, which is a song you just heard, causing her voice to sound hoarse and shaky. She apologized for this before sending it in, but was surprised to find the directors actually loved it, as in the film, Cara's character sings the song during a snowstorm and would rightfully sound weaker. So the demo version Kara was so nervous about ultimately ended up being in the final version of the film.
Ooh, that's cool.
It's interesting because that kind of draws back to the story about Beauty and the Beast, mm-hmm. when they were trying just to create a demo for Beauty and the Beast, the song Beauty and the Beast. And they had Angela Lansbury sing it on a whim, where she came, flew in that night, super late, did the whole thing, and they actually loved the way she sang it. So it was, I believe it was supposed to be Elton John who was supposed to sing it at the time. They were going to have Elton John come
I'm
in
really
and sing
glad
the song.
He didn't. No yeah. offense to Elton John. I love Elton John, but I don't see him as a teapot.
Yeah.
Watching people dance around a ballroom. I mean, that... Could,
I mean,
I, could
I'm
you
pretty
hear
sure
him singing that ever just the same, but have it like all Elton-y?
I'm pretty sure Elton John can see himself as a teapot. I put nothing past him.
No, I'm just saying, I don't know how much I would have fared in being like, Crocodile Rock, Beauty and the Beast. Yes.
Well, it's one of those things where you don't know there was something better available. So.
You're saying that's the better option.
No, no, no.
No, I'm saying.
He's saying, I hear what he's saying.
Yeah,
he's
gets
just,
it.
He's saying if
that's
there's a possibility.
He's your there, roommate.
All right, back to this movie here.
We got distracted. It was Elton John.
So 2020's The Willoughbys was a very interesting film based off of a children's book series. And I believe it is a series. It's only one book.
No, it's only one book. It's about 175 pages. And it's written by Lois Lowry, who wrote The Giver, which if we were all subjected to that hot mess of book turned movie turned.
I was furious when I thought that this is going to be a movie. I was like, I hated The Giver, and I hated having to read it. And this is the end of the conversation about The Giver.
I'm solid with that. Because I was in the same boat with you for The Giver. But The Willoughbys is a complete 180. So the book, the movie takes on aspects of the book. A couple of things have been swapped around. But for the most part, it's fairly consistent. I think personally, after reading the book and seeing the movie, I like the movie better.
Really?
Yeah. And we can talk about that later.
Yeah,
after
we'll
get
into the details
like,
in a little bit. But
all them things. It's not The Giver, first off. That's the first part.
So let's take a quick time out here.
Yo.
Because... the reason why we saw The Willoughbys. Because
I forced you to.
Now.
I was so angry.
If you didn't hear last week's episode was quite jarring for Amy. And that's putting it light.
Jarring in general for anyone who viewed it, to be perfectly honest.
We bit the bullet for you guys who were listening. We went ahead and fell on the sword for you so that way you wouldn't have to watch it and you could just get a good
and
rundown.
And some people did anyway, and they're like, it was beautifully shot. And I was like, but it did you know?
It was funny. Zendaya, whatever, she actually put out a tweet on Valentine's Day saying, hey, happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And if you happen to see Malcolm Marie today, I'm sorry.
Oh, at least she's aware. So I love her. She gets points. On the points.
Exactly. It's kind of like, it's kind of silly and funny and true. What she said in regards to that tweet and seeing how self-aware she is of it. But yeah, last week's episode and then the week prior as well, we did more serious films. We've actually done quite a few serious films just because we're hitting the tail end of films that were screened in December to meet the 2020 awards requirements that are being released in the early January and February months. So
it wasn't technically serious films. It was more I would have established them as emotionally, not jarring, but emotionally serious movies.
Out of the last four movies that we've talked about, have you seen any of them aside from Malcolm and Marie?
I'm scared to watch
okay.
Invisible.
So what I'm saying is, I hear what you're saying, but yes.
The ones on the docket that were coming up were also emotionally charged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hence why I threw the Hail Mary pass of let us watch some redheaded children.
So coming into this movie, we decided, coming into this week, actually, we decided to go ahead and make the change up because we were going to see another serious movie for this week. And so, like we said, we made this decision. I feel good about this decision. I'm excited still to see next week's movie. I can talk, I swear. I'm still excited to see next week's movie, and we'll talk about it next week. But I do believe this is a good reprieve from everything else we've been talking about. And it kind of fits in the aesthetic of the recent holiday, which was Valentine's Day. so talking about the Willoughbys, yes, it was derived from a singular children's book. And the unique thing about this film is it is a CG film that looks like it was done in stop motion, which is very interesting because ever since the Lego movie and all the other subsequent follow-ups to that particular franchise, because you got like the Ninjago movie and then the Batman Lego movie and all that kind of stuff, there's been a lot of work into pushing that realistic CG look in terms of building materials, Legos, bricks, things like that. With the Willoughbys, you have a very interesting aesthetic of what looks to be yarn and almost craft work done in stop motion, which none of it is. It's all in CG. That's the really beautiful part about it. Coming into this movie, though, I want to start with Spencer because Amy's seen it and I've already seen it, but you were the one who was coming into this brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Did you happen to see any trailers or anything on it prior to?
I think I did watch one. I think you either showed me one or I saw a trailer somehow. So I got the basic premise of the movie from that. Surprisingly dark for just as a premise for a children's movie, but I was like, okay, let's see what they're showing kids these days.
And it's interesting. I said before we went on the air, I don't remember this movie being as dark as it was the first time I saw it last year. But especially for a children's movie,
mm-hmm.
Cause you get really strong Toy Story 3 vibes here. But this movie is very unique. Before coming into seeing it the first time, the only expectation I had of it at the time was it was going to be a children's book to film adaptation, which we're starting to see a lot more of those. We're starting to see a lot more of people pulling inspiration from those source materials, whether if it's young adult books or children's stories. I mean, just the other day, I saw on one of the mini streaming channels that we have now because of the fact that nobody has regular TV, something in the No Good, Very Bad Day or something.
Alexander. Terrible, horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, the 2019
live action
Steve Carell, Jennifer Garner.
But they're things like that. They're doing a lot more. I mean, we remember obviously when they did the remake or they did the adaptation of Where the Wild Things Are. They've had a heyday with every Dr. Seuss book nowadays and movie. To the point where I believe Dr. Seuss's wife, who is still alive, pretty much swore that she was never going to allow any more adaptations of her book ever since The Cat in the Hat. That was the
Which
one that
one?
There's only one movie.
Oh,
the live action movie. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
Mike Myers and
Dirty Garden Tools. That was enough.
Oh
Dirty
yeah.
Garden Tools.
Yeah, chopping off tails
Dirty
and,
Garden Tools.
So my only expectation of this was I knew it was going to be like directed towards kids, so I didn't expect a lot of substance. You know what I mean? Like I didn't expect because obviously if you're looking at somebody who wrote
you
The Giver,
you didn't expect me to pick it.
If
it was lacking substance and it was just pretty, it would have been like, guys, we're going to turn off our brains, we're going to take some naps and just enjoy the scenery.
Yeah, pretty much. But little did I know, there's a lot more to this than I thought. But what about you, Amy? What were your expectations?
So originally, I had read the Willoughbys, the book, when I was in eighth grade, just for giggles, because I needed something to purge The Giver out of my mind.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I honestly was like, I have this thing where I look at an author and I'm like,
author,
okay,
redeem yourself.
Pretty much, actually. So, you know, when you look at an actor and you're like, okay, homie, I hated you in this movie. I'm going to give you a chance. Jared Leto, I'm looking at you. and you know exactly what I was thinking of. So, yeah, I went in and read the book and I was like, okay, this is weird. It's kind of fun. It feels a little Roald Dahl-y.
Royal Dahl. That's okay. I hear what you're saying. I just...
R-O-A-L-D.
Roald.
I've never heard it.
I've never heard Roald. I've heard Roald Dahl.
Yeah. That's the only way I've heard of
it. We will find out later. It's not like I did reports on him when I was in fifth grade or anything and had to like dress up as him and do the, you know, read boy. And
we don't need to know your backstory.
So, yeah, it was fun. Anyway, so read this book. I was like, okay, I can get behind you. I'm never going to read anything else ever by you again, woman. But this book was fun and weird. And so in reading it and then seeing the trailer for the movie, I got excited because I was like, oh, it's the, okay, it's not exactly the same. Okay, this looks better. Yeah, this looks better. And I get behind Martin Short because he's weird and fun. And anytime he's animated, either, you know, well, not just in person, but actually animating, he's doing voiceover work. It's something neat to see. So, yeah, I was excited to see it. And it turned out to be, better than I expected. Hey.
And that's one of the things about Martin Short. Martin Short just... as an actor himself is animated. Like looking at anything he's done in his previous filmography from Clifford to the Three Amigos to everything.
There was that terrible one where he was like a fairy godfather.
A Simple Wish.
Ha-ha!
Wow.
That red hair though, right? That red hair and those
teeth.
That
movie is ridiculous.
So ridiculous. But he's wonderful. He's just him. He's so good. Keep going.
I'm assuming nobody saw the Santa Claus 3.
Oh, when he was Jack Frost.
Jack Frost.
And he took over the North Pole. And he had an entire song and dance number. Oh,
it was,
yeah.
It was pretty bad. Talking about letting someone go until they hang themselves. Yeah, that's yeah.
Yes.
it's great to see fun actors having fun even when you don't see them directly. Jane Krakowski has always been a very animated actress. She had a great stint on 30 Rock. She's done several things prior to that. She's just a very fun personality. And to see her kind of stretch out a bit into the realm of, you know, doing other things. So we'll talk about actors and actresses in a second. But first impressions. I want to know, Spencer, what was your first impression as soon as the film was over? And I know it's pretty fresh because you just saw the movie today.
Never have I ever felt after watching a children's movie, I'm so glad the parents are dead now. Because, like, honestly, these two are terrible.
I almost spilled tea all over our audio interface.
Like, no, they're the worst parents, especially at the end of the movie. Like, honestly, I was expecting them to go the Matilda route where it's like, oh, yeah, we'll just send you off with these people. Bye. Not what happened, which I guess we'll get into later.
Yeah. But which by the way, if you haven't, so I mean, you've had a year. If you haven't seen the movie yet, this is going to be a spoiler-filled review, obviously. I mean, if you haven't seen it, that's on you. What about you, Amy?
So after it all, very similar. I'm like, yay, they're dead. Yay, children are with better people. And then I was like, dang, the song, though. Like, no more song. I'm done for song. Which I can't. Even after repeat viewings, it's the same thing that I'm like, you know, song. I don't like it. There, I said my piece.
Yeah, we were discussing about how the song reminds us of part of the main theme of Caillou. And if you've ever been subjected to that show, it is terrible.
And Caillou has been canceled, so there is no
more Caillou. Oh, it is.
Yeah,
good.
He was officially canned after being in...
Cancer finally caught up to him.
Like how old was he? Like 4?
Yes.
He was like a preschooler, kindergarten for like
We're
10
terrible.
Years. Well,
You're
I mean... He was like a preschooler kindergarten.
He never
for 10
grew
years.
Hair. Didn't you ever wonder? Just
well, yeah, he was a 4-year-old for 10 years. So glorious day, his I time mean, has come.
Hey, make a wish can do the best they can.
Oh my god!
He was called home.
So
first impressions for you.
First impressions. Controversial opinion. I actually really liked the parents. I really did.
What do you mean you liked the parents?
I thought they were fun. I thought they were unique.
Character.
Like, honestly,
they didn't feed their kids.
I'm not saying they were morally correct. I never said they were morally right. I just said I liked them in the film. I really did like their unique dynamic. Like, watching them go through all those different travels, I want to see just the series of them getting out of all those little things while they're being super mushy-mushy with each
they
other.
They danced. Like, they showed seriously. Us what they did.
I know.
Yeah. Their love kept them warm.
But I did not expect every time, like every single instance where they got their tour guide either eaten or mauled.
I felt so bad. He was the taxi guy from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And he just kept going. And I was like, why would you do this to this man? You stole his phone. There's piranhas.
Yep.
You like...
It was great.
Lava,
it was absolutely great.
Acid.
And he shows up still at the end on the at the base of the mountain with all their skis and everything. Like, he was still there, so he was still alive.
But did he get paid?
No, of course not. Aww. I stiffed him. Those are the type of people they
it
are.
It is the type of those people.
And honestly, I thought the movie was good. I mean, it wasn't. It was good. It was a good movie. I enjoyed a lot of the parts in it, but kind of like what Spencer was saying, I did feel like, even on the second time around, I did feel like, man, are they allowed to make animated movies this dark? Because honestly, it takes 5 minutes. Cut off 5 minutes at the end of this movie, and it goes south real quick.
Yeah.
Like that's the difference between a good movie and a really dark movie. And this was one of those movies that I really thought. Thankfully, they had those last 5 minutes. Because let's be honest, the last 5 minutes of this movie, if you trimmed that off, the film ends like right there, and it's like it could end. Like, I feel like they were like,
you know what? It's not gonna end right there.
Though. Well, I mean, you don't know.
No, you know.
Yeah, do you?
Well, yes. It's an old fat. The Ricky Gervais cat keeps telling you this is an old fashioned story.
How old fashioned? Because if we're talking like old fashioned, like grim fairy tale, we know how those end.
Well, yeah, and that's
cut off feet dancing on the hot stuff. I know how that goes.
Not that talk. Oh my gosh.
I'm just saying, if he's talking old fashioned, we can go all the way back.
We're going to check in the closet for
Hans
you.
Hans Christian Andersen turning into foam. We can do that too. Come on.
Cut out her tongue. Yeah. We're missing heel. Yeah, we can go the whole fairy tale route. I am well versed. But so in the book, the entire concept is like, in the book the parents aren't as bad as the ones in the movie, which is, so they still, like, dad goes to work every day, works at the bank, mom stays at home, cooks, they actually feed the kids, but the parents are just like, these kids are so just like, I'm not for these kids. I don't want them in the house. Like, you don't even say thank you when I make you food. And the kids are like, we hate our parents. They don't love us the way that we think we should be loved. So the entire thing is like, they start wistfully dreaming about, you're like, we're winsome and worthy orphans, just like in old fashioned stories, because they get the best families and the best endings. And you're just like, children, no, that is not what happens to all the orphans. Little matchstick girl should attach a something. No. But yeah, so that's what you're going up against in the book versus the movie, where the parents are just straight despicable. Like, yeah.
Well, then I think I do like the movie better.
Yeah, it sounds the like. Movie's a lot more fun.
Yeah, I feel like, though, I wanted more of the parents in the movie. Just thoughts.
I mean, you could.
I mean, short of beating, they weren't that bad.
They locked their kids in a coal cabinet.
He obviously knew how to get out of it. So.
Well, and also he didn't get to eat. He ensured that all the other children ate.
Well, apparently he's not really used to eating either way, because he was going to try to serve them a wall lobster.
And that mouse.
And the mousetrap charcuterie board. Like, come on.
It was.
So I question the validity of this child's ability to report his ill treatment, because apparently he thinks food can come off the walls.
Do you remember this is the one that he was the first one as the firstborn child? Do you not recall? You are.
Somebody needs to count them chromosomes.
What?
Just saying. I just. I feel like
we're so confused.
But no, I really do appreciate. Well, and a lot of it isn't so much the parents and what they do that I enjoy. I just really, really, really like the interaction, the ridiculous, the fun that Martin Short and Jane Krakowski are having in this movie. Because it's like they're just ridiculous. The whole, like, whatever
that,
he's
that
doing.
That noise that he makes was unsettling.
I don't even know how to do it, but it was like, it's like a warble or something.
If they did it in the animation where his entire throat went wavy, and then they would use it as like a purring mechanism to calm her down, and we're just like.
And the wife would like lean against his throat as it was purring, and it's like, oh, okay. But
no, or the farming of his mustache. because she needs yarn. Yeah, and like she
and the way she
yeah, the way she makes him farm his mustache for yarn, and you're just like, oh.
I mean, hey, if you had an endless supply of you know,
facial yarn.
I mean, if you had supplies that didn't end, I mean, you would do it. I mean, people get milk from cows, so, you know, that's an endless supply.
They don't purr on a cow.
But they feed it. They fed his ego when it came out.
Oh, that's true. She did feed his ego, and suddenly there was a very long strand of facial hair.
Exactly. Oh. Spencer, don't shake your head at me.
No, I'm with Spencer.
This yeah. movie, so here's the other unique takeaway from this movie. This movie is uniquely subtextually sexual.
Yes.
In so many ways.
How many times can we say mother's balls?
Mother's balls are aflame, are on fire.
Mother's balls are burning.
Yeah. The ego stroking to mm-hmm. create a long strand of hair. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. But
there's shenanigans afoot. Let's be honest.
But the good thing is that it is limited to just the parents. Because and I'm just saying, like, if Terry Crews and Maya Rudolph made those same interactions, I would feel really, really awkward about this cartoon altogether. But that does kind of jump into our conversation about the voice actors, because I mean, you do have a great array of voice actors. You got, like we said, Martin Short and Jane Krakowski. You have Terry Crews, who plays Colonel Malinoff.
Mm-hmm. Commander Malinoff.
Commander Malinoff.
He's a retired candy maker, but in the movie, he's a candy maker, but he's like straight up Willy Wonka this. We don't know how that factory is going. He by himself with some really fat diabetes ducks.
Something.
Them duckies.
Yeah.
They lay rainbow eggs. And they're boys.
And then you have Maya Rudolph as the nanny, Will Forte as the oldest child,
Tim,
as we mentioned, Alessia Cara, who plays Jane, mm-hmm. The second oldest. I don't know who voices the Barnabys.
Sean Cullen.
Yeah, there you go.
Which he plays. There's two Barnabys. So there's a set of twins named Barnaby. They're both Barnabys. And until Nanny comes, they're just Barnabys. Barnabys with an S. And then it's Barnaby A and Barnaby B. And then that's basically how you know which Barnaby is Barnaby. A Barnaby. I don't know. It's a lot of bees.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Who was the voice actors for the Child Protective Services or whatever that was? Or the orphan services.
It's like orphan service. No, yeah, it was. Was it Department of Orphan like Protection Services?
Yeah,
like
Colleen Wheeler, who was the orphan services agent.
We don't know this Colleen. What more information do we have, Spencer?
Oh, gosh, I didn't click on that.
The design of them was great because it was very Mr. Smith from The Matrix. And like, even with the TVs at one point when they're escaping the Department of Child Services or whatever.
She was Mystique from X-Men Evolution.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Yeah, visually she doesn't look familiar, but her voice does sound familiar. But the cast itself is great. I think the icing on the cake and in the perfect amount of time was the narration by Ricky Gervais. Mm-hmm. I really do appreciate. He, by the way, plays the cat. Who's just a cat, but he's not in there too much to where he takes over the film. It still seems very balanced where he comes in at key points to kind of push the story forward when nobody is available to continue the story forward.
Yeah.
And you have to appreciate that because as much as Ricky Gervais can be overpowering in certain parts or in certain roles or in certain movies, mm-hmm. in this particular format, I think he's great. And I think he really kind of hones the whole film and brings it kind of round full circle. But I honestly, I don't really have any complaints on any voice actor in this film.
No, I think everyone did a great job.
Yeah, I did. And this is another kind of spoiler, I guess, whatever. At the end, did Sean Collins still voice Barnaby A and Barnaby B when they got their mustache?
The deep voices?
Yeah.
I believe he did.
That was hilarious. because one of the key things about this film is the Willoughbys are a proud people who really love their mustaches.
Everybody grows a mustache, even the girls. You are great. Yeah. Everyone has glorious, wonderful, brilliant mustaches. And except for father.
Except for their father, whose mustache gets trimmed regularly, obviously, as we mentioned, for yarn. And Tim, who is the oldest, is aspiring to have this huge, voluptuous, you know, well-manicured mustache. And it ultimately comes down to, at the end of the film, the sister has hair coming in on her lip, which she's very proud of. Mm-hmm. And the twins, who are the youngest of all of them, have these full voluptuous mustaches.
They have Tom Selleck mustache.
They have the broom, everything. They, you know, Hercule Poirot, all that kind of stuff. They have the big old mustaches, and their voices apparently drop yes. as part of that. So that was hilarious.
Even the baby ends up with a mustache. But it's a meat mustache.
Oh, I was going to say. I was like, wait, did I miss that part?
No, yeah. It's so fun. Like, if there's standout voice acting in this, of course we have to give it to Martin Short and Jane Krakowski.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is so wildly hilarious. It's not just vocally encouraging. It is literally listening, like, you're a fly on the wall in their house. And it doesn't feel like you're intruding, but listening to them move through the different aspects of their characters, but just the pitches and
yeah,
it's so funny and so fun. And then Maya Rudolph, I loved as Nanny mm-hmm. or Linda because it's just her. It's just basically her being her and being extra bubbly. And I'm like, I like you. You can be my nanny. I like you.
Well, and going back to the whole Martin Short and Jane Krakowski thing, you can hear, like, they're doing ultimately verbal acrobatics in these scenes where they're going back and forth and they're, like, doing the mushy love talk. And, you know, then they get scared and they bounce off of each other. And then their characters really do reflect their speaking ability mm-hmm. quite well in some of those scenes where it fits. It really does fit. I'm not too sure in terms of, like, Will Forte as Tim. I'm not a big fan of Will Forte, just to be quite honest. So I don't know if it was, like, a good representation of his normal voice acting. I don't usually watch his stuff.
He's a little bit deeper than that sound. I watched The Last Man on Earth off Fox for quite a bit. And so his Tim was a little bit higher and a little bit softer than his natural speaking voice. So he did a good job. It's night and day from the Tim in the book, which is great. Tim in the book is pretty much a butthole. Like, he is a jerk. He bosses people around. He tells them, like, I'm the oldest, so you do what I say, blah, blah, blah. And this one was more like, I'm protecting people, but I don't know how to do this. I want to be a Willoughby. Like, it was good, and it balanced against everybody else in, like, vocally, everyone was really balanced as a movie. There wasn't just, we can pick and choose who we like best or which performances made us laugh the most or connect with the most. But across the board, it's just well acted, mm-hmm. period.
Yeah.
Spencer, do you have anybody you like?
Well, yeah, I'm going to default with mother and father because just all of their interactions, especially when he was dancing through part of the movie, and I was like, you're just waving your arms. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
That's actually a part of the movie where I rewound. I was like, was he moving? Because, like, I was looking at the screen at the time, and I was like,
I swear I was paying attention.
But yeah, those two, and then I love her in just about anything she's in.
I concur.
Except for that recent Clara commercial, whatever that was.
What?
Clarna, where she's Clarna. Four of her on the little ponies and
the Super Bowl commercial. That
it's her on ponies.
It's four miniature hers on ponies.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's pretty disconcerting.
Yeah.
ponies.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say, yes, the whole cast is pretty fantastic. I think the voice acting works really well with the character that they are portrayed on screen. Jane, who's, like we said, portrayed by Alessia Cara. If I didn't know what Alessia Cara looked like, I'd say the voice fits this character pretty well.
I still don't break that for me. I don't shatter my dreams. Don't show me what she looks like. She probably looks like some pop star, but right now she's just a really scrawny little ginger girl with big lashes and giant glasses and a dream and a song in her heart and a really good embouchure when she plays the trumpet, and she got a mean bass. Like,
she looks nothing like her character.
She wanted to name a baby Taffeta. Like, there's options.
If it helps, she's Canadian.
Hey. So. Sorry, that no. turned out to be an inexplicable pun.
But like we were mentioning earlier, one of the great things about the movie is its ability to create realism by making you think it's done in stop motion, but it's all in CG. Because let's be honest, their hair is made of yarn. Like, yeah, it really does look like yarn. You look at it up close, it looks like yarn. You see what the mother is knitting with, it's yarn. It seems like there's a lot of opportunities where they created moments of realism where it looks like somebody's making a craft stop motion movie, but it's not. It's all on CG. So I want to pose this question to you guys. Do you think that the usage of this kind of realism in CG is going to essentially remove the need for stop motion altogether in film? Because if we continue to move towards the sense of realism and creating that, like with the Lego movie, mm-hmm. Which the second Lego movie was beyond expectations from the first one. Like the realism, the way the scratches on the blocks look like, the way a lot of the pieces look like, the realism was there for that movie. Do you think that as we continue down this road that we're going to essentially lose the need for stop motion in film? Because obviously as a hobby, people are going to do it, but in film. Amy, what do you think?
I hope, honestly, that we don't. Every time I see a stop motion film, I am always just enamored and amazed at the craftsmanship, the care, the timing that it took to create something. It is mm-hmm. 100% a labor of love, and it's a well honed craft. I'm not going to say it might go the way of becoming one of those lost arts, but I don't want to see less of it. I always want to see more of it. The Willoughby's does something great in where it gives space for textures to appear, that it is an added aspect of realism to the CGI, but it never detracts from it. Versus when you see stop motion, you can tell even in some instances where it is stop motion. I had watched The Corpse Bride literally the day before, and I'm like, oh man, I forgot how much I love this. Where you can see on occasion there might be like an extra little thumbprint on somebody or something, the timing seems to be off. I personally don't think that stop motion is going to go the way of the dodo. And I really hope that it doesn't. I hope it maintains that wonderful niche, but that so well-loved fan-carried niche mm-hmm. that it keeps going for a long time. What about you, Spence?
I think it's going to end up kind of like practical effects where it's kind of just gone away for the most part, but then every so often someone will do it like a serious, like, you know, this is done in stop motion. Because the thing about stop motion is it takes a long time. Like, it looks fantastic, but like when people are like, it took us like 10 hours to do like these 5 seconds. It's like, it's such a long time. And they always come out looking amazing. But
because you have to keep in mind 24 frames per second. So that's 24 frames for 1 second. 24 times 60 is however much. Then that's just for 1 minute. Yeah. And then you times that by however many minutes there are in the film, not to mention the changing of the sets and everything. It's actually for most people nowadays, for most studios, it's actually cheaper to do CG than it is to do stop motion. You would think, though, analog versus digital, it'd be, you know, totally cheaper and you know, less whatever if you did it stop motion. But no, from what a lot of people are now saying in the industry, stop motion is actually more expensive now to do than CG. Yeah. And obviously, like, for the manpower and the hours and so forth. But the last CG, the last stop motion movie that was out was 2019's The Missing Link.
Yay, which, Susan!
Which, if Leica keeps doing what they're doing, I don't think stop motion will go away. Mm-hmm. Because every time we think, oh, well, they can't do better than this, and they do something else. Like, everybody saw Paranorman in 2012, and they're like, oh, it can't get any better than this. And then you get Frankenweenie out of Disney, mm-hmm. and that was stop motion. And then after that, you get things like Early Man, and then you get Isle of Dogs. Then you get, Fantastic Mr. Fox. And then things like Missing Link. And then ultimately, one of the most beautiful stop motion films out there, in mainstream media, Kubo and the Two Strings. Yeah. That's a phenomenal movie. And
you didn't bring up like Coraline, or even going to like we go farther back and we do any, you know, not Burton, because he didn't. Well, Burton didn't do Nightmare Before Christmas.
Henry Selick did Nightmare
Before
Christmas,
which is always the one everyone's like, but. Yeah, it keeps growing, and it's such an evolving, beautiful art that I agree that Leica will not be going anywhere if they keep putting out amazing stories too.
But
beautiful art.
In the same instance, like what Spencer said, though, I actually have to agree with Spencer in terms of the nature of stop motion and in terms of the current environment that we're in right now with the industry and the pandemic and the pushing of, you know, making more opportunities for movies to be made and produced and created so they can get to the theaters, so that way, you know, more jobs can come in. I think it's ultimately going to relegate itself back to like a
Harryhausen
special moment kind of thing. Yeah, like a Harryhausen moment. Oh. Where there'll be a film and it'll be mostly CG, and then they'll do this one sequence in stop motion, and then they'll talk about it in the press junkets saying, oh, by the way, you know that scene that we publicized, whatever that we said, it's all done in stop motion. Ooh, ah. Like, I really think that's going to be the nature of how stop motion goes.
Oh, no.
And it's unfortunate because, you know, people, like you said, like people like Harryhausen, who made stop motion so so much of an art form with Sinbad and The Last Voyage. You got things like Clash of the Titans, the original, all these other films that he's done. He's made a name for himself, and he's made a name for stop motion. So much so that they make reference of it in several different other films, like mostly Pixar films, where you have, well, Disney altogether, where the restaurant that in Monsters, Inc., where Mike Wazowski and Celia go to is Harryhausen's. Or you actually just recognized this the other day.
Yeah, the piano in Corpse Bride that they're playing is a Harryhausen piano.
But it's on Ray Harryhausen is his full name. It's unfortunate to say, because if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you know I'm a huge fan of practical effects. I love seeing people create effects that are tangible, because there's a difference between the tangible portion of an effect and seeing it done in CG. Great case in point, 2011, 2012's The Thing, I believe. It's supposed to be the prequel to the 1980 The Thing movie. The entire movie had originally been done where exquisite effects artist Alec Gillis, who's a great guy, he's wonderful, I had a chance to interview him a while back, he did all the practical work in it, and it looked great. He still has all the B footage and all that. And once the film was done, the studio looked at it and was like, nah, we're going to change all that to CG, and removed every single effect and replaced it with CG work. And it looks pretty bad. And when you see it compared to what he did in the things that he's released since then, it's like night and day. Like, it looks, what he did was more of an homage to the original film, as opposed to what the studio did and kind of messed it up. But yeah, the stop motion industry, I think, honestly, is going to go to the way of the artists, where the artists are the ones who are going to come forward and who are known for doing things like this are going to drop it into their films as an homage to that of the art form that once was more regular. And then I think a lot of it is due to the industry, because in this particular form, it looks like stop motion with the Willoughbys. It does. And if anybody was none the wiser, they could probably say like, oh, they did a South Park, where South Park started out as literally construction paper pieces and animated together. This is very similar in, you know, visual, but if you weren't none the wiser, you would say, oh, it was done by stop motion. Unfortunately, it is not. But there, it doesn't mean that there isn't any artistry in what they created. I mean, because let's be honest, the way they made these things look, the way they made the film look, it's still very beautiful. You know, from the streets to the design of the kids. I mean, wouldn't you agree, Amy?
Yeah, they balance really well the cold, not the cold, harsh reality, but the outside world in comparison to the Willoughby households, which is essentially just like Up. It's this one little house in the middle of the city where everything's going around, and it's overgrown and it's old fashioned, and the walls, the carpet, the texturing on the pictures on the wall, everything carries such weight that it feels like it could be real. And then like when they're outside and they're going through the streets, everybody kind of almost looks the same, and everything has a very muted kind of gray tone and palette to it. So the way that it's designed is to always maintain focus on your characters, so mm-hmm. it keeps them in the front versus you getting caught up and staring at everything in the back, which is something that I do. So it's something that helped me focus on what was going on in the story, following and tracking the characters, and then maintaining investment. So it's really just awesome done.
What do you think, Spence?
Well, so
that was a heavy sigh there. It's like he's got something to say. Let me put on my listening ears and check this out.
I feel like the only thing that's really missing from this movie, for like the stop motion effect of some things, is the flaws of stop motion. Mm. Because like their hair is a bit too perfect to be yarn. Like you can tell that it is yarn, but it's also very perfect yarn that has never existed in the totality of the human experience.
It's been unsoiled by human hands, is what he's saying.
Yeah, but like that's not to say it looks bad. It's just there's hints. Like that's the thing about like CG, is that you get exactly what you want.
Yeah.
While with stop motion, like, there's a thumbprint. Oops, whatever. It's fine. It looks good enough.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like a lot of the movie is just, like, it's just really good looking, to be perfectly honest. They do know when to use color in this movie because, like, their house is, like, all these colors. The rest of the world isn't, except for the candy factory, which even that has, like, only color for candy, and like the rest of the factory is kind of just mostly white for the most part.
Yeah. White or steel gray, yeah, or something.
Yeah. So like I actually really enjoyed, like, you know, just the art direction of the movie.
True. It's got a lot of really great color palettes that kind of are reminiscent to Wes Anderson, the things that he does, where the color palettes in certain parts are very either muted and dark to kind of correlate with the scene, or very bright and vibrant, or very focused. Like the director wants you to see this particular thing to stand out amongst everything else. But that kind of drops me into my next point in this, in terms of any issues that you had in the film, other than kind of what you had just mentioned about the flaws, which, to be quite honest, that's a really great point. I didn't think about that, but it's true. I mean, you look at anybody who has created any type of stop motion, and there is that sense of the tangibility of it, like, yeah, oh, this was moved, like either a movement is a little too quick or too, you know, disjointed, or the Wes Anderson likes to do it a lot in some of his movies, where he intentionally creates like a still frame, and he just moves the character like while it's frozen through the scene itself, which he does that a lot in Fantastic Mr. Fox. Mm-hmm.
Which is also based on a book.
By who?
Roald Dahl.
Okay, just making sure. One of the things
he's like, let's see if she can say it another. No, it's Roald Dahl.
So one of the things that I really want to kind of get down to is ultimately the main question that's been burning in my mind since the beginning of this conversation. Does the book end similarly like the movie? And I'm looking over at you, intern.
End similarly like the movie?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you said there's only one book.
Yeah.
Okay, and so does it end in the same fashion as, like, so, okay, let me backtrack a bit. What we've been kind of grieving over about this movie is, within the last 15 minutes of this movie, you have this epiphany from the children that they realize, at this point, they are orphans unless they get their parents back. And then, even if they are horrible parents, they will still be together as a family. So they build this dirigible. And
a really awesome looking dirigible, if we're going to talk.
With, you know, with attached to a van.
It's got a great music. They stole Phil's van because the guy that owned it was named Phil. Like,
that's true.
It looks like, it almost looks like a duck slash pot belly something or other that shoots rainbows.
Very true.
They put sugar in the gas tank. Sugar in the gas tank. Sugar in the gas tank.
Don't ever put sugar in the gas tank, by the
That's
way.
That's the entire Reddit joke. When they stop to refuel, they're putting sugar in the gas
tank. No, but I know. Anybody who's listening, if you're not wise enough to know not to put sugar in anybody's gas tank, don't put sugar
in
anybody's gas
tank. I feel like they've seen a TV show that has done that and why that's a bad idea.
We've seen it, but we're talking about modern day people who see shows.
Oh, way to get us.
We grew up with cartoons where they fought each other constantly.
I didn't watch Tom and Jerry.
I was just talking about Looney Tunes, but okay.
Ooh. He just generalized it right there.
But so they get to this point where they're like, okay, we have to build this thing. We have to find them so that we can be a family. So they build the thing. They go and find their parents who have happened to be frozen together, except, well, ultimately by their lips, which, because apparently their love is so hot, their lips stay unfrozen. They are frozen atop of this very high, unclimbable mountain. And so they make their way to the top of that mountain, find the parents, thaw them out, plead with them to take them back, let them be together so that way at least they can be a family, even if they are an imperfect family. You think the parents have this, you know, revelation.
They have a Matilda moment, or they have an epiphany, and they're like, yes, we will do this for the children.
They say no. This is not.
We can do better.
This is not WandaVision. No. They say they will do this for love. That's what they say. They'll do it for love, and they essentially push the kids out of the way, steal their dirigible, and take off like Grand Theft Auto, leaving the children by themselves atop of this mountain without transportation in the freezing snow. Now, this is where we get to the point that I'm really kind of getting Lassie vibes here, because there's a song, blah blah blah, brings them together. They're together essentially, and they're like, "Oh, we're together, we're a family." And as as Tim is like saying this, and his voice is kind of drifting off, they're beginning to become more and more covered in snow, and then they ultimately get to the point to where they're fully covered, and then it fades to black. At this point in time, you think, what the heck am I watching? These kids just died in a cartoon movie. Nah. But yes, I know, Spencer, no. But what I'm saying is, at this point in time, this could have been like a perfect moment. Like, if the director wanted to be that kind of a jerk, they could have been like, snip, roll credits.
If that had happened, I would have been like, this movie is amazing because it had... the balls to do such an insane thing.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, if this movie actually... Whoops. Stuff has fallen.
Apparently, your exuberance about children dying in a snowdrift has come back to haunt you.
But what I'm saying is, if this movie had the forthright to be that type of director, they could have released two versions of this movie... and just released one version on Netflix and then said, if you wanted to see the full version of how this ends, you have to buy the actual whole movie or pirate it, whatever works.
I would like to remind you, this is the same. People complain when Netflix raises their price $1. You think there's not going to be blood in the water for this?
Yeah, but they'll still do it. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Last year around April, May, did you have much of an option?
Anime.
Wow. You know what? I would have still said no. I said no to Disney and their madness. Say no to Netflix and whatever fake madness you create for them.
So the movie fades out, and then they have this wonderful rescue from the nanny, played by Maya Rudolph, and the Colonel Melanoff, played by Terry Crews, and Ruth, who's the baby.
Pun, baby Ruth. She's been adopted by a candy man. Not the candy man. Keep going. Aren't we due for that movie?
That's later this year. You know what? Focus.
I got
distracted. So does this movie, ultimately, yeah, it ends up, you know, they're sunshine saved. And rainbows, and they're saved. They become a family. We can be a family. And they're a family. Does the movie end in similar fashion to the book?
So here's where it gets, here's where, strap in, fellas, here's where it gets a little sticky. So after the whole dropping off of the baby to Melanoff, you find out that part of Melanoff's backstory is prior to baby Ruth being dropped at his doorstep, he had a wife and a son. And his wife and his son went off to the Swiss Alps and they got buried in an avalanche and disappeared. So Commander Melanoff's been sad for a really long time. And the rescuers would send him letters and be like, hey, so we're still trying to find your wife and your son.
Like finding like a lost letter.
No. So they kept sending him. But it was just basically making him more and more depressed because they're still looking for his kid and his wife. So he stops reading the letters. The day that baby Ruth shows up on his doorstep, he's like, oh, I can love again. So he starts actually taking care of baby Ruth, very much like the movie. And then... since Nanny has moved in, is taking care of the Willoughby children, they realize Nanny's actually pretty cool. We like her. So all the while in the background, you have Mr. Mother and Father Willoughby going on all their adventures. They keep like sending the Willoughby children letters like, oh, we escaped some crocodiles and we escaped these piranhas and all these things. So we finally get to the mountain. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Nanny has taken the Willoughbys out at one point to, they walk past Commander Melanoff's house. He sees them and they kind of strike up a conversation. Nanny offers her services to Commander Melanoff. Tim gets really jealous. He's like, no, this is our nanny. You can't have her. And they're going home. Uh-huh. Well, they find out that at this point the home's been sold. So they don't have a home. And they receive a letter that says, oh, your parents are frozen on the top of an Alp. Like, ta-da, no more parents. So they kind of have a moment of like, oh no, what are we going to do? So Nanny goes back to Commander Melanoff and is like, hey, look, the kids and I don't have a home. Is it okay if we stay here and I will help you raise baby Ruth? And so he's like, yeah, that's great. So that's how they become a impromptu family. At this point, Commander Melanoff and Nanny are not married, but they decide to take a trip to the Swiss Alps. Go figure.
So much misfortune has befallen people.
So you come to find out, meanwhile, you come to find out that on in the little village that was below the Alp where Mother and Father Willoughby have frozen to death, the wife and the son were rescued. And they've been living in this village. But since Commander Melanoff hasn't opened any of the letters, he doesn't know that they're rescued, and according to Swedish law, she is former Mrs. Commander Melanoff is now single, so she marries the postmaster in the village, and then
this is turning into a straight up like novella.
Yes, what? Yes, yes.
Amor, ¿quién es esto?
So they decide to give the postmaster, former Commander.
Yo
Mrs.
soy señor dulces. ¿Cómo está usted?
But so she gets married, the son, his Commander Melanoff's son's there, and then somehow Jane ends up opening one of the letters that he's been like hiding, that he keeps getting, and he finds out, she reads it out loud and finds out, oh, surprise, your wife and your son are alive, and they have been for a while. And he's kind of like, oh man, I guess they've gone on with their lives. Meanwhile, in Switzerland, oh, it gets better. So in Switzerland, his son is like, I hate my life in the Swiss Alps. I don't want to be here. His mom goes, great, go find your dad. Bye. And literally like sends him out walking. No joke. Sends him out walking. So
this book is hardcore, right?
So Commander Melanoff at this point and Nanny
Papa,
and the kids.
Mi madre no está aquí.
So So Commander Melonoff
decides
that he's going to marry Nanny. So he and Nanny get married. They adopt the Willoughbys, and then they all sit down to have a proper Willoughby dinner. And then tick, 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 tick on the door. And they open the door, and there's a hairy, shaggy little boy, and he's like, "Papa!" And they're like, "Come in, son, be a part of our family." And that's pretty much how it is. Oh, yeah, and Tim, because they're technically not adopted, but adopted once they grow up, he marries baby Ruth. So, yeah.
All right.
Parents are dead.
That went from, like, Mexican novella to, like, straight-up Serbian movie real quick. Like,
you asked, but basically, yeah, the entire running thing
I'm
is
starting
like,
to like
it's ridiculous. It's somebody's lost somebody in the avalanche. They're alive, but you haven't responded to my letter, so I'm gonna marry this postman, and then we're climbing this mountain. Oh, but oh no, we freeze to death! Hooray, we're orphans! Oh no, we're orphans! Like we could do, I could do that entire Olaf sequence from Frozen 2 with this one, and then nothing.
I like how Switzerland in this version of the universe has no telephone.
Exactly. Right? Like, it's just letters.
Well, and that neutrality is going away really fast in this conversation.
I mean, that postman really wanted to marry like, ex-Commander like, Malinoff's wife.
Yeah, that's probably Senor, what happened. It's like,
yo soy sus hijo.
Oh, yeah. There's a law. If your husband doesn't come here to pick you up, you're single. That's
which is literally cool. Like how they kind of describe it. And you're like, what?
It's all made up by the postman.
The postman. Right? He's like, I'm the postmaster general, and I say if your husband hasn't shown up in 6 to 8 months, you a single lady.
He's a general, so he gets to make laws. And
but so, no, the parents aren't as fun or despicable in the book as in the movie.
No,
in
apparently
the movie,
it's Commander Melonoff's wife, hussy over here, like...
She decided, well, and the funny thing is in raising baby Ruth and meeting Nanny. So at this point, because his wife and his son, I think it was like 6 years prior that they've gone missing. Like it's a distance. Oh it is a very long distance. But he has lost the will to make candy. So like he lives in this dilapidated house and there's no candy or anything. And then in raising baby Ruth and kind of falling in love with Nanny and the Willoughbys, he suddenly starts getting inspired to make candy again. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. This is weird.
I'm getting my chocolate from another man, apparently.
Dang, oh homie. Gosh.
Swiss chocolate?
Well, that was one of the better lines, too. He's like, we're going to go to Switzerland, baby Ruth, the land of chocolate and cheese and knives. And you're just like, what, Terry Crews? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Maya Rudolph's just bagging oats, like cooked oats into giant Ziploc bags to take on a trip. Because everyone says those are delicious, apparently.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't do it according to...
Yeah, which is why the movie is so much more fun.
That's not even... No, this version is jarring. It's like...
It's Lois Lowry. Do you expect anything less?
I don't know what to expect now.
That's actually a very good point.
It was like tongue-in-cheek. It was a little satire.
Tongue-in-cheek?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a little tongue-in-cheek. That's what...
All it needed to be doing was be written in Spanish, and you got the script of a novella right there.
Hey,
like, seriously.
If we find the translation, will you read it dramatically over the air for a half an episode? Spencer, we've got options for Cinco de Mayo. Oh, it's a dramatic reading of the Willoughbys.
Mi amor, ¿por qué estás aquí? ¿Y quién es esto? Yo soy el hombre de dulces.
I just want you to do Barnaby A and Barnaby B with the mustache.
Olé.
Yeah, I'd say they're different.
Yeah.
I'm really kind of at a loss because of that.
What could you say?
I don't know.
He asked
it's,
questions
no,
I gave was, answers.
Yeah, they were great answers.
They were great answers.
Just not the answers we probably were expecting.
Exactly, because I'm like, it's like, I want to read the book, but I don't want to read the book.
I don't want to read
it. It's 175 pages. You could bust through that sucker in a hot minute.
I
gave that woman a chance with The Giver. I am done.
Yeah.
And then I found out there's sequels to The
don't,
Giver.
No,
I'm not
no.
reading
never,
it, but the fact did, that they yeah. exist.
I didn't tell
Are
you,
you
that.
Kidding me?
I didn't tell you that because I thought you knew, but now
well,
I don't know.
I don't know if it's
4 books.
I don't know if it's pretty obvious, but if you didn't read any of those sequels in school, that means they weren't any good.
Okay.
The book wasn't good to begin
yeah,
with.
Yeah, just because things are assigned in school doesn't make it a good book to begin with.
If the school doesn't even think it's worth reading, you know it has to be bad.
the school. Really, we're judging schools on what they choose to force children to read.
They force you to read literature? Textbooks. Why would you know if that, and that's boring in itself.
Good or bad literature.
Wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. Last thoughts on the film, as we kind of dial down and get to our rating. Amy, last thoughts on the movie.
If you would like to watch something, I believe at the time it had a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, feel free to check out The Willoughbys. It's on Netflix because Netflix owns it, which means it shouldn't be cycling out anytime soon. It's roughly like an hour and a half. It's a fun, and I'm going to bring back this word, jaunt, through jaunt. A ridiculous concept. And if you ever worried about or wondered about the family you make and people choosing people, this is for you. Happy Valentine's Day. Spencer.
Okay, I want to make a rebuttal to something Eddie said earlier. Where you said this was a Toy Story 3 moment when they were left on the mountain. It is not. And here's why. It's because Linda exists. Linda is the nanny, and you know she is coming because she has been on these kids' butts the whole movie for the most part, except for one thing. But then she got over that, and she came back, and you know she was there from, like, she was going to be there till the end. Toy Story 3, when they are going into that incinerator, they all have the look of acceptance, which you just do not expect or see coming.
Oh, I'm sorry. These kids had the look of acceptance.
Yeah, but
in
you
that
know
moment.
Linda's coming. In Toy Story 3, you don't think anyone's coming for these toys.
Andy could have came.
No. Andy's going to be piping down to an incinerator to go collect some toys. Like, yeah. The look is also everybody reaches out and it's like, together forever to the end. And you're just like.
It's like a Jonestown moment or something. Everyone's drinking that Kool-Aid together.
No. This and the Willoughbys, I will go with Spencer on, like, Linda is coming. And if Linda didn't show up, this would be a very different time.
Yes, it would.
That's what I'm saying. The movie was very entertaining. It was very fun. Visually, it's a wonderful spectacle to see. The acting is great. The highlights of Martin Short and Jane Krakowski are wonderful. The music in the movie is good. The one song is quite overused, but
it's the tune. She doesn't even actually sing the song until the end, but because she uses the same tune so many times that you're just like,
y'all getting
girlfriend.
Some Caillou vibes or
yeah
something?
That no
it's the I'm Caillou
reminding me of that show is a bad move.
he did it
I didn't. He did it.
No, I remembered it on my own.
He did it on his own. Thank you very much.
And then you brought it back up.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. Keep talking.
Anyway, altogether, it's a great family film. I do have to say it was fun to watch. It was fun to see, fun to hear. So it all in all is a pretty good, you know, pretty good family movie. And it's got a 91% right now currently on Rotten Tomatoes. So there's that. So let's go ahead and go around the table. Does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles? I'll go ahead and kick this thing off. The film does pass for me. It's pretty wonderful. It's pretty great. I like the story. Apparently, I like this story version a lot more than the book. And I'm glad that I got a chance to see it and all the visuals in it. However, I also have to keep in mind what kind of implication does this have on the future of anything like stop motion and things like that? If we keep fine-tuning CG to this point, will there be any room more for stop motion after the fact? So that's just something to keep at the top of my mind. Not saying that the Willoughbys are going to be the downfall of, you know, stop motion, but
kind of what you made it sound like.
I'm just saying I'm wondering what the implications are in the direction things are going. So it does pass for me. And in terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 4 monocles out of 5. It was fun. It was great. I had the whole trifecta of great voice acting, great writing, and good music. So what about you, Amy?
I give it a 4.8.
Does it pass or fail?
Well, sorry, I'm distracted.
Sorry, you're distracted because
yes.
You have it on your
yes.
phone.
That's
why I threw it over there, because you're over there.
That's so encouraging and so inspiring. So, yeah, this passes for me. Okay. I really enjoyed it. If you couldn't tell, I needed something that was a little calmer than what we were watching for the last couple of days, a couple of weeks. So I pass. I love this movie. It's fun. It's very family friendly, even with all the innuendos and isms just go in it. Anyway, I give it a 4.8 monocles. They're not broken. They're not cracked. They're shiny and rainbow colored.
Okay, Spencer.
Movie pass for me too. It's really well done. It had a good story, and it's not like one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's good for kids, but adults will hate it. No, I actually liked this movie. I thought it was good. I did not like the fact that it reminded me of Caillou, so I'm docking it like 0.5 from it, and I'm going to give it a 3.5. It's still a great movie. If you have like flashbacks from Caillou, it's not that many times that a song shows up.
You guys in that in Caillou,
it traumatized,
oh my gosh,
adults.
What,
man.
Caillou?
Yes.
Okay, that seems like a conversation for a whole nother day. but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Check out this movie. It is available on Netflix. So, like pretty much billions of other people across the world, you have to have access to at least one Netflix account. So check it out as soon as you can. It is great, and it's perfect for this holiday month, if you will. Thanks again for listening. You can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We have over 250 episodes, with last week's episode being kind of the highlight right now because it kind of scarred all of us in this conversation. but check it out, as well as all our other great episodes. We have something for everybody. Listen it in. Check it out. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Also, drop us a line on our Facebook and Instagram and Twitter page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. You can also check us out by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else where you can subscribe to podcasts. This was a great episode, and I actually had a lot of fun, and it was a little lighter than the other episodes that we've had for the past couple of weeks. So, we want to thank again Miss Intern Amy, IJNU Robot.
Yay.
Where can people listen to your guys' podcast?
You can always find me when I am not interning with the Filmlosophers at thecapelesscrusaders.com, the hub, the home away from home for all things Crusaders. You can always listen to us as well on Spotify, not Libsyn, I don't think so, Apple iTunes, anywhere you're going to find a podcast. Most of the time we do happen to show up. It's pretty awesome. And then, of course, you can check us out on our socials for the Capeless Crusaders on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. We are the Capeless Ones. So, yes.
Well, there you go. Well, like I said, that wraps up another awesome episode. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm not an orphan intern, Amy.
My gosh.
Yay.
Class dismissed.